Hey, everybody, it's comedian Trent McClellan, and you're listening to my podcast called The Generators. Every single week, I have a cool guest, and we talk about life, professions, creativity, success, failure, and all sorts of other cool stuff. And every single one of these conversations, I learned a great deal, and I'm pretty sure you're going to learn a great deal, too. So hang on tight, and thanks for listening to The Generators.
Buddy, how you doing? What's happening? Huh? What's going on with right now? What are you doing? What are you doing right now? Okay. No, I got no problem. I'm not judging. I'm just asking what you're doing right now. That's all I'm doing. I am recording this one in my hometown of Corner Brook, Newfoundland, and just got back from the gathering in Burlington, Newfoundland with my good friend Sean Majunder. And Matt Wright, fantastic comedian, and my good buddy Nigel Lawrence. And man, we had a great time in Burlington at this gathering thing. It's unlike any other festival I've ever been to. It's kind of a combination of you got food, you got fire, you got comedy, you got music, and some of the kindest people I have ever met in my life in Burlington. You can tell it's a small little community where Sean is from. And something that he wanted to do to kind of highlight the beauty of that area. And I tell you, man, this thing does it. It is a good time. Some of the best food I've ever had in my life. We're eating like ribs and brisket and homemade mac and cheese and salmon and chicken tacos. Like that's what we do. We'd like listen to some music for a while. I'm like, oh, let's just go get some food. So you just go get some food. Just jam yourself. It's free. It's like, okay, all right. And it was delicious. Then you'd walk around again, check out some more music. Hey, you want to eat again? Yeah, okay. And then you'd go eat again, jam yourself. Incredible time. If you haven't been to the gathering in Burlington, get yourself down there every single summer. Fantastic time, casual. I had more conversations with strangers who just talked about how much fun they were having. There were shed parties going on, picnics. There was hikes going on with like some of the best chefs in Canada. We're like just cooking the food on these things. My good friend Jeremy Charles, who owns Raymond's restaurant in St. John's and the Merchant Tavern, incredible chef. He was there doing his thing with some other fantastic chefs. It's such a cool thing. And they're like cooking this food over open fires right there on the actual festival grounds. Yeah, I don't know anything else like this. Like it was wicked. Such a fun time. And then I also got the glamp. Have you ever glamped before? Do you know what that is? It's not quite camping, okay? It's not quite glamorous. It's kind of a combination of the two of them where you're kind of more of in a wood structure tent, you know, with an actual hardwood floor. And you have beds. So myself and Nigel Lawrence, comedian, we hung out. We had two separate beds and hung out. We were roommates all weekend, and we had a blast, man. It was so much fun. Electricity in this thing, in this tent. We're in the middle of the woods. Every night there's a campfire outside. We're just, like, hanging out with the cooks and the other comedians and telling stories, looking at the stars. It was, what a cool, cool time, man. It was pretty sweet. So yeah, do check that out if you get a chance. So just back from that. And, now I have like a couple more days left here in my hometown. I'm going to see some more sights and stuff. And then I'm back on the plane back west to Calgary. And then I pack it up and go to Halifax to start with 22 minutes. And it's wild because people have been asking me about it, like, how do you feel? And besides the initial rush of when you first find out, you know, that's a pretty overwhelming moment and you're getting all these kudos and congratulations from people. And then you kind of, I did anyway, I kind of forgot about it. Not forgot about it, but I kind of, you just move on with your life and you do your shows and you focus on other things like the podcast and booking other shows and moving forward. And now, you know, you're a week or two out and now it becomes very real again. So, and even that, man, like just the kind words from people through, you know, emails and messages and just on the grounds at the festival and stuff of people coming up and wishing me well and stuff was, it was over the top. So thanks to everyone for all that. You make God feel pretty special. So yeah, it's been a lot of planes for me, man, this year so far as well. So another one on Tuesday back to Calgary. I don't know how many miles I've traveled. I'd have to clock that at some point and just see how much am I clocking in a calendar year, you know? Because it feels like it's been a lot. I mean, I've done a lot of travel since January 1st. And so, yeah, another one coming up. What else is going on, man? Fort McMurray tickets went on sale Tuesday. I don't know if anyone, any comedian, if any entertainer deserves the amount of love and support that I get in Fort McMurray. But, man, we put these tickets on sale. We've got a pre-sale thing till September 1st. The show is not till October 21st. But we put tickets on sale this past Tuesday. And we got like almost 200 tickets gone already, like just like that. Bam. Unreal. People are tagging folks in Facebook posts and saying, hey, man, come to the show. And I got to tell you, when you first step out of the comedy club circuit and you decide you're going to try to start doing, you know, these bigger venues, it's risky and it's scary. And there's 1,000 reasons not to do it. But I kind of felt in my gut that I should try this and try and go for it. And I did. And Fort McMurray, Alberta, was one of the first places that embraced me and said, like, yeah, man, we're going to be there for you. We're going to support. We're going to get crowds coming out. And they did, and they've done it every single time I've gone up there. And so my first time there, I did the smaller recital theater there at Keano College. It's like 200 seats, and did that and was blown away that we sold that out, and then moved to the bigger one, which is almost 600, and sold that out. So I've just been – I have no words, man. It's like you – I feel an immense sense of gratitude for the support up there, because people have so many options. That city's also been through so much so much stuff in the last year and a bit with the fire that went through there, but still they've always managed to come out and support me in some way. So, man, can't believe it. So, yeah, thanks to everyone up there who's coming and spreading the word, and to all you who've got tickets already. We're also doing the stand-up and sit show. I don't know if I mentioned that already, but where the first half of the show is going to be an opening act, and then myself doing my stand-up thing. Then there's going to be an intermission, and then we're going to have like a proper sit-down Q&A. And the reason I want to try this is because I feel like when I'm in the lobby afterwards and people are asking questions coming up individually, I feel like it's a little bit rushed. It feels a little bit unorganized, and I like to kind of make it more of a casual sit-down thing. And if you ask a question, someone else can hear the answer to that question. And people can ask about whatever they want, and I'll answer it. And I just thought it'd be a cool thing to do and try. So we're going to do this, and apparently it's something people are looking to do. We're also going to do it at the St. John's show on September 9th, which is already sold out, by the way, which is, again, insane. No words for the support that people have been doing out there. Again, there's so many options out there. And I say this all the time to comedians, like with on-demand movies and YouTube and cell phones and all that, that people still come out and sit down and go to a comedy show, to me is mind-blowing. And for a show to sell out weeks and months in advance and stuff is just, there's no words for that. So thanks to everybody in St. John's and Fort Mac for the crazy support. Also, too, what we're doing is you can email Trent at trentscomedy.com. If you have any questions that you want to ask during the show, we're going to get a list of them, and we'll have them already. We'll already have them. If you email them in ahead of time, we'll answer them during the show as well. So if you want to do that, you can. So we've already got a couple for Fort McMurray already. So, yeah, something cool just to try and be a little bit more personal at the end. And you can ask about whatever you want, about stand-up or about certain bits or the podcast or 22 or life questions or risk or whatever. I don't care. I'll answer it and try and be as honest and as forthcoming as I can to do that for you. So yeah, thanks everybody for all the support out there. I really appreciate it. This week's episode of the podcast is my good buddy, Mr. Dave Merhege. I met Dave, man, maybe, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago, maybe a little bit less. And he was out of, he was based in Toronto at that time and came out west to do some shows. And we went on a road together, and just, he's such a unique dude because his comedic style is kind of very rambly, kind of manic. Like, it's just like this guy is having these thoughts just appear to him, and he's just kind of going. It's kind of a hip-hop vibe to it, almost like a rap-type style. It's hard to explain unless you've seen him live. Very, very unique. And as soon as I saw him, like, this guy is just, there's no one else doing what this guy's doing the way he does it, you know? And such an awesome guy as well, offstage. We hit it off right away. Our sense of humor is very similar, and we hit it off as friends. He's one of those guys that you think, you know, if we lived in the same city, we'd be hanging out all the time. But he was in Toronto, then he moved to Los Angeles for a little bit, and now he's making his home in New York. And we get into all that in a podcast, too, about, you know, living in those different cities and what it was like, and talk about what it's like to be a comic. And that's one of the great things that I wanted to do with this podcast, too, was to let people inside the life of comedians, because I think there's a lot of misrepresentation as to what it's like. And yes, there are parts of it that are very shiny and nice, and other parts that are very kind of gritty, and just you had to put your head down and just push through it. And we get into some of that too in this conversation. And Dave's one of those guys too that you can kind of get deep with. So this thing has got a bit of it's a combination of everything. There's a ton of silly in there. There's a ton of serious in here. And I think that's what all great conversations are generally, is that you get a little bit of everything. And we end up going off on some riffs and some tangents. And Dave starts talking about, you know, a sexual encounter he had at one point. I don't know how it got there, but it just ended up there. I don't know. And I'm like, oh, I don't care. I'll just roll with it, you know. And so so that was pretty interesting. And yeah, man, talking about being a comedian and what it's like after good shows and after bad shows, and being just honest and not pulling any punches with it. And I've got some really cool feedback from some other comedians out there who've been listening to the podcast, and some comedians who are just kind of starting out, and how they kind of really been appreciating the level of honesty and frankness with it, with regards to what it's like to be a stand up. And again, that there are struggles with it, that, you know, this whole mindset of, you know, do what you love and you'll never work a day in your life, and how I really kind of think that's bullshit, because to say that nothing, you know, no challenges are going to come your way because you're following your passion is not realistic at all. And comedians will tell you that, people who love it, who are diehard comics, who hit the road and do, you know, hundreds of shows a year, they'll tell you, man, there are times where it is really, really tough. And whether that means the show part of it, or the travel, or maintaining a relationship, or there are guys who go through financial struggles, or there are, you know, there's a whole bunch of obstacles that you can encounter. And that's besides the just life stuff that can happen, that can happen to anybody, regardless of profession. I mean, just specific to the profession itself. But again, if I really feel this is my true north, is that if you just feel like this is what you're supposed to do, then you're going to ultimately push through that and try and get through it. And for those of you who listen to the Alan Doyle episode of the podcast, that whole concept that he kind of embraces as well is that, you know, the work will save you. If you love the work, then that's all that matters. That's the joy. The joy is in creating and performing, and the rest of it's going to come and go. But that's your true north, is just enjoying that creative process and performing. So if you can get back to that all the time, then you're going to be okay. But yeah, there's bumps in the road coming. So we get into some of those too, and talking about what that's like. So always great to chat with Dave. We don't connect that often, again, because with the travel situation and schedules that working comedians have, it's really, really hard to be in the same place at the same time. And I was able to catch up with him, and we did some lunch and stuff and hung out. And we recorded this one at the Laugh Shop in Calgary a couple months back when he was coming through. And so glad to catch him, because, like I said, he's a good dude. And he's one of those guys, too, that I think, you know, he's got a really good heart. There are some people in the business that, you know, they just, their heart's on their sleeve. They try and do the right things. They're not necessarily perfect, but they try and do the right things all the time. And Dave's one of those guys, incredibly unique talent, but also just a real genuine dude. And you can get a really direct line with Dave, if you know what I mean. And what I mean by that is just that you can be funny and silly and all those things, but when Dave's the kind of guy that'll also, he'll let you into his personal life and let you, you know, see the real Dave and the non-comedic Dave. And I always appreciate those conversations, because we all need those. We all need to know that there's a human being behind this performer, and that we're not, you know, people are always amazed to see that comedians are, well, sometimes we're not on. They always expect us to be laughy and jokey and making people laugh and be the center of attention all the time. And quite often we're not that at all. And as in any profession, I think sometimes only another person doing what you do can relate to you. They can only understand what it is you're going through. And Dave and I think always have got along on that level too as well, where we kind of, you know, you can kind of bounce stuff off each other, what you're going through, and the other guy gets it. So I've always appreciated his friendship, and he's a great dude to know. So I think you're going to enjoy this one. This one, again, has got a bit of everything, and is a fantastic conversation with him. And he's one of those guys I kind of follow from a distance and kind of always wish him well and whatever it is he's doing. So, yeah, man, sit back and enjoy this chat, my good chat with my good friend, Mr. Dave Mahesh. Later.
Shining down, good Lord. Baby got him open all over town. Strictly bitch, you don't play around. Cover much ground, got game by the town. Getting paid is a forte, each and every day to play away. I can't get her out of my mind. I think about the girl all the time. East side to the west side, pushing bad rides.
Oh, yeah, there it is. Dave Mahesh, how's it going, buddy?
Pretty good. You know how when, like, all, like, not, I don't want to say all, but, like, some comics would be like, my name is, like, yeah, exactly. Like they open podcasts.
They tell you in TV to do that? Like, so we're going to ask you the question. They won't hear the question, but you say the question in your answer?
But they're, like, so, like, trying to be, like, different. So it would be like, my name is, like, they open the podcast on, like, Extra, and you're like, you don't talk like that.
No one talks like that.
There's no way.
Well, that's, yeah, people can turn it on and off, that voice. It's like, I find even around comedians, I talk different. Like you, there's an energy that other comedians pull out of you, but I don't talk that same way around normal people.
That is fine. I think we all do that. But like that person, I'm more of like, I don't know how they do it, where it's like, it just, it opens, like they're like, they just are too silly, which is fine. But it's just like, I always wonder, I'm like, is that how you really, like obviously this is entertainment, but I wonder if they talk like that when they get if they're alone and if they get a coffee.
Yeah.
Like are they as like
you, same way? Is that how
you
approach
it? It's like are you doing this for the mic or are you doing this for life?
Yeah, I don't know. That was CK's problem with sitcoms. He goes like, you watch a traditional sitcom like Friends or something, he goes, no one talks like that. No one goes, here's a sentence, you say something funny. He goes, another sentence, someone says something funny. He goes, that's not real life. He goes, no one I know talks like that. And it's like, it's kind of true. No one's like, oh yeah, set me up for something hilarious. And then I say it, and then people laugh, and then I say something serious, then you say something funny. He goes, that's not life. That's not real life.
I didn't even know. You know? And you watch it. Like I've watched Friends in a hotel room alone, and I'm like, I never clued into that.
Because they want it punchy, right? Like, that's why his show is so out of the ordinary, because they want it, like, every, like, 10 seconds, some gag, right? Because they don't want that dead air to them that's death, where he's like, no, like real humor comes out of, like, stuff's going along normally, and then, boom, something out of the ordinary comes and makes it funny. Because that's real life. But, like, every 10 seconds, someone says something that's hilarious. He's like, that's not true.
Who's got that many zingers? I mean, I'm out here trying to get one zinger a week.
I mean, I prep my zingers before I go to a social gathering. I mean, I'm like, can someone ask me about napkins? I got something I want to say here. And how did he do it? He tells us to ask him about napkins.
And then we just zingers are hard to come by.
Oh, dude, it's the toughest thing. So we are here at my home club, The Laugh Shop in Calgary, Alberta. On stage currently, for those of you who can't see us, and with nobody here. Comedy clubs are eerie, dude, with no one.
It's kind of sad.
In them. Isn't it sad?
Yeah, it is.
You realize how just kind of, wow, it's just a room.
Sometimes it actually feels the same way when you're on here with
I've had those nights where it's like, oh, there must not be anyone here. Well, not sold out. It's here. Sold out, actually,
I
Trent.
It's just me.
must be something I said for the last hour.
You ever get real with yourself on stage and you go, oh, man, maybe this was the wrong thing?
Career choice?
Yeah, but you're 20 minutes in. Yeah. You're like, well, I have to do 25 more minutes.
Isn't that the worst when you know, you had those sets where you're on stage and like within 2 minutes you're like, this is going to be some work. And you look down, and like you're hoping that you're further ahead than you are, but you're looking like your watch, you're like, oh, no, I still have to do 57 minutes.
Yeah, Red Deer. That was the same thing happened last year. It was like, Todd Ness. I was with Todd Ness, and he was super, super funny dude. And he was just doing the beginning spot, and he did really well. They loved him. And they loved him both nights. And I just, first night I went on, just nothing, man. And I had my friend Johanna. She was at the side. I think she was eating, but I looked at her after the 10 minutes, and they weren't giving me anything. And I looked at her, and they could see me looking at her, and I shrugged to her. Like, I gave up in front of them.
I don't know, man. I don't know what you want from me, but This is what I got. This is what I brought. You know, you're like the guy who comes to the potluck with this shitty salad. Like, there's nothing you can do at that point. It's like, this is the salad I made. I don't like it either. But, I mean, it's what I brought.
Yeah, and I hated everything I was doing. And then the next night I go, I think my friend was like, oh, no, you'll get them the next day. And you always think that. You're like, you'll get them the next day.
But the worst thing.
But I didn't get them the next day.
But you didn't get them the next day either.
No, it was back-to-back struggle. I would have been, if the booker came in and goes, like, if you would have been like, Dave, and I go, I'll stop you there. I go, I don't have to come back.
I'll fill in the rest.
I don't know. Have you ever bombed like that where you go, I shouldn't come back, like off of principle?
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah.
Even when the booker's like, no, tough crowd. I go, no, this was not the crowd.
No, this is not for me. This is not my kind of people. I'm doing you and myself a disservice by continuing to entertain here. But I was going to say, like, when you're in those nights where it's not going well, like I've had different times in my life where I felt like when I first started, it used to freak me out totally. Like, I was just like, okay, I don't know what to do. But then I went through a phase where I was like, okay, I think the next joke's going to get them, or the next joke's going to get them. But then I went through another phase where I was like, I don't think the next joke's going to get them, and I don't even want to fight to try and get them. Like, I'm just like, I don't want to be here. They don't want to be here. They don't want me to be here. Like, you go into that mental space, and then I got to another phase again where I was like, No, sometimes you just got to sit in the pocket and take the punches early, and then I trusted again that the next bit would get them. But sometimes it just doesn't happen. That's just the facts.
And there's nothing wrong. I think I've come to a grips where I go, there's nothing wrong with that, but I hope they know that there's nothing wrong with that. I think sometimes they feel bad.
Yes.
And they try to fight it, and then I want to get to a point on stage where I can be like, no, let's bomb together.
Yeah. I'm aware of what's happening.
Yeah.
And let's just go down together while I drag you to the bottom of the seafloor. I mean, I still got 42 minutes up here. Yeah. So, I mean, this is...
It used to hurt me. Yeah. Now it doesn't. Now I can go to the hotel room and go, you know what? Keep watching the rap battles that I normally would watch. Like, it doesn't fade. Doing really well or bombing,
Yeah. I remember doing, these gigs when I first started. You do, small town Saskatchewan somewhere, and it wouldn't go well. The next day, you're driving in that car, dude, by yourself, just contemplating your life. I got to do something else. This is, you're replaying every bad joke, everything decision you made the night before, everything from what you ate to what you wore. Like, everything was the worst. But then a good show that night or the next night, and it all washes away.
It goes.
And you refresh.
Even, at those points, I used to, go to that driving phase. Then I went through a phase where I just cursed the town out. While I was in the town, I'd just be on the way out. I'd be like, fuck you. I never wanted to even be. Then now I'm in the phase where I drive out. I go, man, I really wanted an ice cream sandwich.
I know what this was about. Oh, man, I really needed that ice cream sandwich. Hey, if I don't get an ice cream sandwich, I'm just not funny. Is that what you thought? You blamed me?
Yeah,
your lack of success
comedy,
on the lack
man.
Of ice cream sandwiches in that town?
It's nothing to do with comedy.
Oh, it's hilarious. But it is, I think, too, as you get older, you don't take it as personal anymore. Because I found this, I mean, you and I have talked about this off the podcast, but, if you don't have balance in your life in other ways, if all your happiness eggs are in this basket, this is going to crush you time and time again. Yeah. So it's like, you're going to have good nights, you're going to have great nights, you're going to have nights that weren't so great, but it's like, that's just your job, and you can pack that up and leave it and go hang, to go with your buddies, do whatever. But before, when I first started, man, that first couple of years, It was like a smell you couldn't wash off of you or something. You just carried it around.
It's like I wasn't ever a drug addict, but I remember dabbling with, not dabbling, but I remember doing ecstasy for a period of time, maybe 4 months, where we were doing it every weekend, not every day. And I'm not an addict at all, so I'm not trying to compare it, but I just remember being so just on that track. I just wanted to do that. So then all my eggs were in that ecstasy. You know what I mean? We would just, Monday we'd be like, can't wait till Friday. And then when Sunday hit, that crash reminded me of comedy early on.
Yeah.
Because you just do out, we would just sit in this dark basement. Dude, when are we have to wait till another day to get pills.
Yeah. So how does this work? Yeah.
So I don't know if that is it.
No, there's a parallel there, because I think when you start in stand-up too, everything is accessible to you, booze, drugs, all those things are accessible to you if you want them. And then you're putting
just such an adrenaline high from just performing comedy. But I remember, dude, one of the worst pieces of advice someone gave me once when I first started, they asked me, it was this headliner who'd been around a bunch of years. He goes, how many drinks do you have before showtime? And I was like, I just got a 7-Up or whatever. He goes, yeah. Oh, no, man. He goes, you got to have like 6-7 beers before you get up there to kind of lose your inhibitions and stuff. And I was like, what? Like, what? And it's like, those people who took that route, like, they needed more and more booze to get on stage. So, like, 6 beers, 2 years later, that 6 beers is now 12, and now a couple during the show, and then eventually you're not in the game anymore because you just drink yourself out of it.
Yeah.
But I was like, if I had taken that advice, I was like, I wouldn't be a stand-up now, man. I'd be like, I'd be in a shelter somewhere. Like, it was the worst advice in the world. But because it worked for them, they thought they were doing me a favor by passing on that knowledge to me, like, you know?
Yeah, you'd be, like, at that shelter now just, like, trying to do 1-2 jokes a week in that shelter. Yeah. Like, you'd be the shelter comedian.
I mean, they're like, which, you know, could be a circuit out there somewhere. I mean, I'm sure there's someone playing the shelter circuit. Dude, it's so hard to get into this shelter circuit. It's who books that?
Dude, you know, and on any given night, though, a shelter comic could probably have more gigs than
a comic. I mean, it could be, in all reality, it might be just the thing that a shelter needs. It's like, if people need to laugh, and if you had someone who, especially someone who comes from their experience, who could be, you know, also in the same situation, like if that guy can go, hey, like, you're talking to their community about their struggles, there could be a part there where they go, yeah, there is some humor in this. Like, it's like, but for a guy from the outside who doesn't have these struggles, this is like,
you know, if that shelter comic started doing alt comedy rooms,
right?
Huge.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they would be like, is he from a shelter?
Yeah, he's so different. Yeah. He's so different. He does things where I saw him with a card outside, so I think he's playing it legit, or he's method, one or the other. I feel like
if a shelter comic did an alt room, he comes up and puts a piece of bread on and doesn't touch it for his whole set.
Yeah.
And tells jokes about like just nature.
Yeah.
And then goes to his closer joke is to go touch the bread, looks up and puts his head down and leaves as a metaphor that he's still...
He can never touch the bread. In life, he's never touched it, and he still hasn't touched it.
I swear, if he went to Brooklyn, he would blow up. People would be like, did you see the shelter guy who doesn't...
Have you seen the bread comic?
I see the bread.
Dude, you got to see the bread comic live. Dude, it's the same piece of bread every show. It's moldy now because it's been the same bread since... You started, what, 2008? Same piece of bread. I wouldn't touch it. But
I want to do...
That would be amazing.
Alt comic where I'm a Middle Eastern dude who's in a... it's a box that says caution on it, and the box is mic'd, and I'm doing my set of anti-racism inside the box.
Inside the box.
That would be my act.
Is the box a metaphor for...
For how they're not, it's a caution. Like, we're treated like a caution.
Okay.
So I'm giving you what you want. Like,
can you let me know when opening night is for that man? I want to make sure I'm checking. I got to see the bread. I got the bread guy at 8 o'clock, and I'll check out your late 10:30 caution box show
at a fringe shows all over Canada. You would at least come watch that for 20
dude,
minutes.
Dude, you'd be like, what's in that box? You'd be thinking that. Like, is that guy staying in the box the whole time? Really?
You have no idea.
You know how tired you'd be in a hot? You know how warm you'd be after a full?
Dude, there's a puppet I saw when I was in Sydney, and the manager at the comedy club was like, have you seen... I saw a poster of it. Was like this puppet. It's a comic, right? It's a comic, but it's a... he was in a duo. It was a puppet and another dude, but the puppet was doing it on its own. And then I'm looking at it, and he's telling me about this puppet. I go, I don't say anything. He goes, you got to see this show. I go, what? He goes, you got to come see this show. He goes, it's a puppet. He goes, but it's not like your traditional puppet. He goes, this puppet used to be an alcoholic.
He's a recovering puppet.
So the puppet had a character. I was like, this is amazing. I'm in. He goes, show up 6 o'clock. I go, I'm in. And I showed up. I showed up like 4. I was so pumped. The sound guy was laughing at me. And I'm in the back, and I see the man who is the puppet comes in. And then he goes up and he does it. And he's destroying. Dude, it's packed. Randy. His name is Randy.
Randy. The puppet's name is Randy?
Yeah. So he's on stage destroying. And there's this shitty ass couples that are in the back. But they're not being too like... They're just being annoying. They're kissing and they got to get shushed every 5 minutes. And then I was like... They bothered me so much I couldn't enjoy Randy. And Randy's talking about downfall, his addiction, his recovery. I go, finally a puppet with edge. I got all these fucking lame ass puppets.
I love to see a struggling puppet. That is when you,
dude. This guy had depth. I was like, I was blown away because I've never seen a
puppet.
Most
puppets, I mean, pretty hollow.
Yeah, they are.
I mean, literally,
they are.
They are. I mean, there's nothing inside. But this puppet, I mean, this guy, I mean, he was layered.
Dude, I thought he was going to cry. I don't even know where the tears would. Like, it was that he humanized the puppet. So wow. I go, this group was heckling kind of, and I leave. And then I'm outside the lobby. I go, I can't believe it. Like, I showed up early. I go, fucking poor Randy. You know what I mean? This is great. I'm glad I did it. And then I think the server comes out. And then the manager comes out. He goes, yeah, fucking assholes. I go, what? He goes, that group heckled the puppet. I go, they heckled? So a grown man heckled a puppet. He goes, yeah, from the back. And I go, what the? How fucking dumb are you in life, man? That person should be killed, dude. Like, yeah. There should be 4 kills a year that are just voluntary, and that person died. Like, you heckled a puppet.
Yeah, yeah. That's your mind processed that and went, I don't like what this puppet's saying.
I know.
And I'm going to tell him. And if the other guy hears it, that's fine too, but this is for the puppet. I don't like what you're saying. I don't like what you're putting out there. And your friend here should shut you up. That's the thing you should
do. Did you ever, like, when I heard that, dude. I thought that was the funniest. I can never, like, I tell people about it and they kind of laugh, but I just still, to me, it's never left me. That the idea that this person heckles a puppet. It's like, surreal. What are you getting out of that?
Well, it's a credit to the guy working the puppet that he's so entranced, this audience member, this guy forgot it was a puppet in a way.
And
was like, man, I don't really agree with what this guy. Like, he literally was focused on the puppet. That's insane.
And you know what? The puppet is that magnificent. If you ever get to see Randy.
I should check that out. I've never ever heard of that.
Like, it's like a Sydney. It's a big Australian comic.
It's weird because puppet acts take a real beating now. Like,
because they're characters. They're not real. This is Randy, man. Like, this guy was telling you about his addiction. You're like, yo. Like, it's not, like, it's not. Who's that?
I mean, one thing
guy?
You don't hear a lot about is addiction in puppets.
Real. Like, Randy, it wasn't. Who's the guy, the white dude that has
Dunham?
Dunham, like, he's those are characters, right? They're amusing, they're entertaining, but you don't get Randy from the block, like, you know what I mean? Like I don't know, like, hardcore, like, maybe dabbled with drugs.
So, like, when
women.
You were sitting there watching that puppet talk about his addiction, and in your head, you were thinking, I know that puppet.
Yeah,
there's a puppet like that in my neighborhood.
Yeah, there's a puppet like that in my family and friends. Like, finally, I can connect with a puppet.
You're finally, like,
it's not racist, you know what I mean?
No, I know what you mean. That's interesting. But it's funny how people can. When you see a good performance, that's something I kind of forgot for a while. I don't know why, but, like, when you're in the entertainment, sometimes you're just so wrapped up in your own world. But then when you go as an entertainer and you're actually moved by a performance, whether it's music or stand-up or a good play or whatever it is, like, you forget what it's like to be an audience member, if you know what I mean. Like,
oh, yeah, yeah, you know? Do,
but then
sure.
When you have that experience again, it's like, oh, man, this is what people feel on a nightly basis because you're on the other side of it normally, you know?
Yeah, and I remember I saw a musician in L.A. at the Satellite, and I was just blown away. Like, I went with my roommate, and I just couldn't stop asking her about this, like, dynamic. Like, it was a real performance. Like, they performed. It wasn't like – the music was great, too, but also there was, like, so much – there was costumes, dancing, and it was great. And I felt like an audience member. Like, obviously I was, but I was like, oh, man, this is how it is to feel. Because in comedy, you kind of just watch shows, and you're kind of desensitized, I guess.
Yeah, I think
but
so.
To go to see a show is like...
Well, yeah, because you go into these shows, too, and I find, like, even when I go to a show now, that performer hat I have is still on. Regardless of what show I go to, it's kind of still on somewhat. Like, I'm checking the venue out. I'm looking at the lighting. I'm looking at the sound. I'm looking at what the seating is like. Like, all those things are still going on in my mind. So to actually suspend that and go, no, man, I'm, like, just an audience member here is, like, it takes me time to do that, to kind of turn that off and put it away. But I went to see City in Color, Dallas Green, at the Banff Center a bunch of years ago, man. And it was, like, just him on stage with a guitar and a couple other band members. But, like, the sound was so pure. And I remember being, like, this is incredible, man. Yeah. Like, just, like, his voice and, I'm like, the songs. And that's one of those first moments where I got real back into it. I was, like, ah, yeah. Like, being an audience member and being blown away by a performance is, like, it's a special bit of business, man.
Oh no, dude! I have that album too. It's like the one of the, I can't remember the actual name of it, but it's late. It was like 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah,
the one with
It's when it comes
My Girl.
Yeah, yeah, it was awesome. So
yeah,
good.
I can imagine even listening. Every time I listen to him too, I feel like I should be sad.
Yeah, it's just one of those guys where I think he seems to be a pretty vulnerable dude, like just talking about, you know, his heartache and anguish, or whatever. And I know people go like, "All right, cheer up," but it's like, what you're going through is what you're going through, and the fact that he can express it like that, I'm just like, man, hats off to you. Because I bought a guitar like in November, dude. I cannot play a chord yet. Like my fingers don't go like that.
That way,
I'm like, it's still nowhere near muscle memory. It's all like I'm struggling. So to even watch a guy play guitar or a girl, I'm just like, that's incredible to me.
Do you see how Yuen got a guitar? I imagine when I listen to his music that I want a white girl that wears like summer dresses, and then she has like mud under her one eye,
okay.
And then she just breaks up with me, and we had just bought a cottage like 2 months in, and she goes, I can't love you because I don't know how to love. That's the line she says.
That's what you get out of it.
And then I drop the tea that's in my hand and I go outside and she's gonna leave, but she left her shoes in the cottage we have, and then she's like, let me back in there, and like, I can't, you know what I mean? We're yelling and stuff like that, and then I can't let you back in there. And she's like, just let me back in there. And I go, why can't you love me? And then she goes, I don't know how to love. That was the line that. And then I just broke down heavy. And then it started to rain. It was just bad, right? But the wiping the mud and stuff. That's what I envisioned.
That's where you're going with it. And as she drives off in a car with another dude, dude turns around and it's Randy the Puppet Man.
It was Randy the whole time.
Like, Randy wins again, man. Randy.
Because the weird part is that Randy was a local celebrity. Yeah. Just like in our town.
That's how Randy got into the stuff, man.
Randy, I go, he doesn't even have a dick. And then she just goes from the window. She goes, you've always been immature. That's
you've always judged puppets before you've known them. Oh, yeah, hold that against me, too. You're just so angry.
Just for her to go, you always judge puppets.
You've always had a problem with puppets. You're a puppetist. Like, what? Did you wake up? Like, what? Did that just happen? Did that dream?
So vivid.
It was just so real. I don't think it happened, but it felt real. I mean, I'm not going to lie to you.
I love, like, romance like that, and I think that's why I can't commit. I love the first 4 weeks of that.
The intensity.
Yeah, and I don't know if I can. I have to get over the fact that it's not going to be like that, and I have to enjoy life and be with the person. But I think I'm at that point now where I'll probably settle. I want to settle with someone, but I remember always being. I think that's why I womanized. Like, I was always bouncing from girls because I love the fascination.
You wanted that, and you wanted that intensity always. So when it died out with someone after a while, your intensity was like, well, I got to rejuvenate this again. So you find someone new to do that with. That's an interesting point because I think it's in this era too, man. Like they say, you know, people talk about back in the day, people didn't get divorced and stuff, or people stayed together forever. I go, yeah, but a lot of those people were also miserable. Like,
oh, yeah.
They just were like, yeah, the guy was an alcoholic or whatever, and they just stayed with it because, well, we're supposed to be married for the rest of our lives. But I also think, like, we're in a society now, like a fast food society, where when shit's not going well, you just cut bait and leave. Like, you know, you buy a new TV every 3 years. People get a new car every couple of years. People are moving. It's like no one wants to sit in the pocket and endure and tough it out.
Well,
and I think that trickles into relationships too, right?
Man, I didn't want to stay in the pocket. But then now I'm just like, man, I just don't want to. I just want to just sit with someone.
Yeah.
Just an hour, man. Just, we don't have to talk that much, but like, you get me, I get you, and then at one point you go to the kitchen and I put on the TV. Like, that's how...
Man, you should write that script up. That's an amazing movie. That's
just
the opening scene.
I don't, I'm cool with that. I don't
want. She goes to the kitchen. What happens? We don't know, man. The movie ended.
Well, I don't want to finagle like pussy anymore. Like, you know what I mean? I don't want always. I feel like always if you could flash my like sex or my times with women, it's always me either going, no, I didn't mean it that way.
Yeah. No. What I'm trying to say is ...
But, it's not fun anymore. Yeah. So,
but I think you also accept too, like a lot of my friends who are comedians or entertainers in general, I think, man, like you do accept that as a community of people, we're hard to love. Like, to sign on the dotted line for this, like to be married to someone like me or you or whatever, it's like, because it's a really insecure lifestyle.
Yeah.
Things change in a heartbeat. There's a lot of travel, a lot of time away. There's insecurities, there's ups and downs of a career. It's like, that's not most people's lives, man. So, like, most people don't want to sign on for that. They're like, that's just too much shit to deal with.
I don't even want to sign on to it. So I don't want to look into someone's eyes and go, do you want to sign on to something that I don't even know if I want to sign on? Can we both live in this mystery of signing?
Yeah. Do you remember? Did you see the movie, the documentary Comedian, Jerry Seinfeld's Comedian?
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that scene where Orny Adams just finds out he got JFL and he's just laying on the concrete outside and he goes, I was happy for 30 minutes, and now I'm just full of anxiety and fear. And he starts laughing because he goes, some woman out there who doesn't know yet is going to marry this. He's just laughing. It's just like, he goes, she's happy now, but get ready because I'm coming. Like, it was so funny.
And it's like been like girls in my, in like the last 10 years that I was like, I could have, I should have went with maybe. I don't know, but you always dabble with that. But
yeah.
I just feel like I'm like, man, you got to cut this shit out. Should just be accept, like try to commit at least. Try at least. Instead
yeah.
Of just,
I think there comes an age too, dude, where you start to realize that, I'm not saying that, you know, if a relationship doesn't work out, it's always the other person. Sometimes it is the other person. That's a fact. Sometimes yeah. It's you. But I think a lot more times where you can look inside yourself and go like, these things that have arisen in this relationship, if you don't take care of the stuff that you got to deal with, that's going to raise its head in the next relationship yeah. And the next one. So it's like you can run from it. It's like, but at the end of the day, if you don't sort out yourself and what you got going on, then it's going to just follow you around from relationship to relationship. Yeah. Whether that's insecurity or just not being able to be happy in life in general, it's like nothing will ever be enough. Like, I believe that. I think.
No, and it's true. And sometimes, all personally, I have, this is like more or less, I have to fix this. Is like, I love the story. Like, I'll just, like, if I hear something or I'm in a predicament, I'll be like, let's just do this for the story.
Right.
Which is always a disaster. Right. So it's like, I'm not even really into this girl, but I'll go do this.
Right.
And then you find in the morning where I'm like, I remember with this girl, not even with this girl, she was like, we were just texting, and she's like, oh, let's link up. And then I was like, oh, come to the bar. And then I go, what am I doing? Because as I go, come to the bar, and then there's that time where she's coming, I go, I don't want to do this.
Didn't feel right.
You know,
yeah.
No, I just, I've been with her, and it's no offense to her. I don't think I connect that way. Like, right. Like we've had sex, and we had fun times, but I don't think there's, like, why am I leading her on? So all these questions, right? And then the booze is kicking in, and I go, and I just kind of go, no, forget it, man. Just do this. I go, the story, and it's like, you're lonely.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean?
Just you defended it.
Defended it, right? Yeah. And then she shows up, and then this is so sad. It's like she's sitting next to me, and I knew I had no juice in me. Yeah. Like, before I even text her, I go, I feel like farting. I just ate this heavy meal. This is not going to be dope. I just knew. So now I'm coming in not performing well at all. And I just look at her. She's like, you're going to go back to my place? I go, yes, but I'm going to be honest with you. I haven't really been having sex for a while. So I'm going to come fast.
Right.
Like, just get it out. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And right there, that should have been a flag for me and her. So now nobody picked up the flag. Who's really dying inside? Me or her? Like, who?
Yeah, are we mirroring each other?
Yeah, if you're like a logical person who likes happiness and fun, you're not going to get that. Someone's not going to tell you that and go, I want you to come to my house. So she goes, fine, but you have to have sex with me again after.
Okay. So kind of like a contract somewhere. Yeah. Yeah,
I knew there was no round two.
Yeah, you knew.
I knew even in the cab, there wasn't even going to be a round one, I felt.
Right.
So I get in there and literally, you know what I mean? And this is so graphic. Sorry if it's so graphic. She's like sitting on her bed and then she's like blowing me. But I'm not even like, this is like, you know, I'm not even engaging in the fantasy part of like, I'm not even being
not
dope
there.
About it. Like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I grab the back of her head and it's kind of half. Like, I'm not, this
you're
is
not,
a point where you
yeah,
can
you're
like
not
be,
feeling
a,
it, yeah.
be a boss, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I go, just as promised, less than a minute, maybe a minute, I roll back on my back. I go, that was a disaster. Like, even on the mid-roll,
you
I go.
You said this out loud?
In my head, I go, what a disaster. Who would want to marry this? Who would even go, how do you report this to your friends?
Right.
On her part.
Right. You're saying, like, she can do better than this. Like, this
yeah,
is not
how,
what she
like,
deserves.
She has
yeah.
brunch with her friends, like, how was last night? Well, this man, you know,
yeah,
the
yeah.
whole story sounds bad. So then she, like, puts her hand on my chest and she goes, okay, so it's round two. I want you to hit it from the back.
Right.
Man, bars. Any man would be like, you know, and yeah. I looked at her, I go, I only slept for 2 hours.
I gotta be honest. I didn't get a whole lot of sleep last night. Is that what you, that's what you threw
yes,
out there?
Yes, all okay. this is real. And I fell asleep, she fell asleep. And it was just like, and then, you know, so that part was the kick. I leave her house in the morning. I don't really hug her. I'm cold. You know, whatever. I'm like, I got to stop this. The wind is hitting me. This is in Toronto. I go, you know what I need? I'll go get a McDonald's
that
coffee.
Should help.
Right?
I mean, that normally helps.
But this is where I was like, I walk and I'm walking up to the lineup. A grizzled old or grizzled white man in his 40s just beelines in front of me. And the counter person goes, sir, you're not, you just skip the line. Just, there's a man behind you. And I go, good, I don't have the energy. I just had an abysmal interaction with a woman, right? And this guy turned to me. He goes, ah, fuck this guy. Like now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's just heckling me the whole time. Like I'm like, and I'm trying to be cool because I go, he's gonna murder me. Like wherever I could hear him whisper heckle me. He's whisper threatening me, which is the worst because I don't know if it's talking to me or. So then I leave and I go, man, I don't want to do this ever again. I just need a wife.
Yeah.
I don't want to go fail sexually and then almost get beat up by a bum at a McDonald's.
That's
like,
true.
Just the whole combination.
That's been your dream for a long time.
That's been my
what? To not
that's been my life.
Have abysmal
years,
sex
bro.
And then go to a McDonald's and get beat up at a McDonald's. I mean, you've always said it to me.
Trent, I've been doing that for 5 years.
Oh God!
Like straight, dude.
Grab
so,
the reins of your life.
And I had to get in. And that was the point where I go, man, I gotta get out. And I think we were supposed to link before I left, and I just bailed. Like I just
you
can't.
You just knew it was a road to nowhere.
I can't do it anymore, man.
Well, that's the thing about it, man. Is like when you also
trying to get out,
you realize too. It's like. There's so much, we have so much choice in our life. And when you can get to a point in your life where you realize, like, okay, this bad thing happened, but I chose A, B, and C yeah. to get me there, there's power in that. Like, yeah. I think where you go, okay, that's preventable. I just don't have to do A, B, and C, and I don't end up there. But some people go through lives like, why is this always happening to me? And whatever. It's like, well, you're actually making conscious choices that lead you down that road. And I think for any adult, whether that's anything you're trying to change in your life, like, you know, your body or your mind or whatever it is, your relationship status or whatever. I think we have far more choice than we admit to. Because if you don't, if you put the perspective on something else, then it's, you don't have to change anything. You just stay being you
yeah.
and look at me just bouncing off all these life events and poor me and the victim or whatever. And then the other way around means hard work. You got to look inside yourself. You got to change stuff. And that's. People don't like change, man. People like to just be who they are. Even if they're miserable, they'd rather be that.
And I want change. I'm being dead ass serious. Is like I just was like, man. And it's not a thing where I admire, like, you know how you admire couples. It's not the grass is greener on the other side type
yeah.
thing. Even if it could be, it's just like I'm exhausted. I at one point was dope with being like this. Like
yeah.
I was like, hey, and I was holding it down. But now I'm falling apart. It's like a team that like you need, like we need to fire this guy.
Yeah, yeah. You're like you know, this coach can't coach this team anymore.
No.
He's gonna move on to the next
team.
Yeah,
I can't. I've been coaching unsuccessfully sexually for the last like months.
Well, speaking of like bad advice, like I said that bit earlier, but I got relationship advice once from a comedian. He's like. Said something like, you got a girlfriend? And I was like, at the time, I was like, yeah. He goes, yeah, that'll never work. Comedy's your woman. Like, you know, because that was his advice to being, like, committed to being a comedian. Yeah. And it wasn't until years later that I actually started to, like, meet comedians who were either in solid relationships or married. And I was like, oh, like, you can do it. But I drank that Kool-Aid, too. Like, the first bunch of years, it was like, oh, yeah, we just run wild and you know what I mean? Like, it's just because that's what was
–
everyone around me seemed to be living the same way. So, of course, when you look around and see other people living that way, it validates you doing the same thing. But then when I started meeting people, like, look at that guy, man. He's settled down. He's, like, happy. She gets him. He gets her. It works. She knows he's going to be on the road, but she just lets – like, she believes in him enough. Like, so I was like, oh, this can be done. But it was like I didn't have any of those role models when I first started. I just had guys who were like, let's get drunk every night. Yeah. Every night's a party.
Same role models. And it's just like – and I probably drank the Kool-Aid and tried to push the Kool-Aid on certain people. But I think at this point I'm like, no, I've had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I don't think I want to do that anymore. I had like extreme amount of fun and disasters and things to report back to friends and everyone thought it was amusing. But now it's time like basically to make my city in color.
Yeah, yeah. That's hilarious.
I brought it all back.
I like you brought that around.
Yeah. I think I just started also listening to Bon Iver and I go, I need to change my life.
I need to change my life. Damn you, Randy.
Yeah. Randy, man.
Randy's been the bane of your existence, man. It's funny because when you do have success even in this game, like, it is great to be able to share that with someone.
Yeah.
It is amazing to be like, because that person's been through the trenches with you and they know how hard you've worked and what you sacrificed and what they've sacrificed for you to have what it is you're accomplishing. So there's more depth to that and more impact to it. But I think that's quite part of the reason why some comics are never happy is because you don't have that. Like, you sacrifice personal relationships, maybe with family even.
Yeah.
Where you're like, yeah, man, I haven't talked to this person in a year, or I haven't talked to whoever, whether it's your mom, your whatever it is, because you're just chasing this thing in the distance all the time. And then you achieve it, and who's around to celebrate it with you?
Yeah.
You know, because you've isolated everyone, you put yourself on an island. So it's hard to find that balance, man. It's like, because it's such a lonely path to just be a comedian. Your community is other comedians, but my road is different than yours. Yours is different than mine, yeah. And so on and so on. So you can really feel – I felt like that a lot, actually. Like the for a couple of years, maybe coming out of it like last year, but for about 2 or 3 years, I felt like I was on an island by myself. Like I felt like no one else is doing – like has the life that I have in every capacity, good and bad. And I'm like, who do you go to for guidance? Who do you go to for some direction to drive the steer of the ship? Because I was like, there's no handbook. There's no manual to go, hey, oh, you're at this stage in your comedy career and this is what it looks like. Simply do A, B, C. There's nothing. Right? So I felt really lost. I felt like I don't know what the next step is professionally. Like I was really, really lost and confused for a while. But and that's a slippery slope because when you have that moment – you can let the demons in, man. Like, that could be a time for drinking, or it could be a time for drugs, or yeah. You just want to bury that confusion or pain or whatever. Stuff. Yeah.
I looked at it, like, too, is like, I see a lot of my good friends now either getting engaged or are married, and it's, like, dope, man. It really is. It's, like, I watch them, and I go, not like a creep, like, I'm not in their living room. Like,
no, not like you used to be. I remember that.
I stopped doing period. That. Yeah, you got charged. I cut that out after I got charged.
No, you know what? You live and learn. And
I fell from the window.
I don't know how you got in the vent there, but you're a slender guy.
Dude, like, I lost a lot of weight, and I went on a training to fit.
Yeah, you went to your trainer. You said, you know what? I want to be vent friendly. And the guy's
like,
I
got my membership. I go, after I deal, after 30 days, show me a vent that I can't.
The guy brings a vent into the gym. He's like, I think you're ready. I think today's the day. And it's just you. It's like you marining like a marine through this vent. It's like, look at you. Look who came out the other side. Look at you venting. Look at you. That's venting to you. No, Dave vents from 7 to 8. No, I don't mean talking about his feelings. I mean he actually crawls through a vent like a marine.
We've never seen anything like this training of his.
Your gym has got nothing but vents of different lengths.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, that's how I train. I do venting.
That would be kind of dope. Eight times a week. You know, if you start, I could start that venting gym and at least fool people into buying it. Because, you know, and I cut you off. Okay. I don't know if you've heard of this. You know, cuddling. Is it dry? There's a dry humping business.
No.
In Santa Monica, you pay, I think it's a dude, you pay and then the women come to get dry humped, which I've been doing for free for so long. Which makes me mad, and I got ripped on by all my friends. Like, so be it that I'm still dry on being in my 30s, but this person is making probably shitload. Because who's to disagree with that? Who's to go, hey, man.
Hey, there's someone out there with that need.
Yeah, and charge $40 an hour or whatever the rate is. You know how much money you can make?
Well, dude, that's the basis of capitalism. Like, I was thinking about this the other day. If you can solve someone's problem, you can make money.
Yeah.
So, like, restaurants, what problem do they solve? People go, well, it's food, but you can make food at home. But yeah, but they're making food for people who do not want to eat at home. They want someone to make food for
them.
Exactly. So a restaurant solves that problem. A massage therapist, a chiropractor, anybody who makes money doing something, we solve a comedy problem for people. They need to laugh about whatever, so they come to us and we solve that problem. So you can name anything. And I think if that someone sees that as a problem, then they're gonna pay money to have that problem solved.
And you people... Like, you know what it is, too? And I don't know why I thought about it so deeply. I go, sometimes you just need to get off quick.
Like a primal thing.
Yeah, it's like dry humping is primal because it's like – It's sex is primal too, but it's like the idea that our clothes aren't off and we're
so it's not even that real contact, really.
No,
it's not
we're
even
frustrated with the allure that it's going to happen. And so sometimes there might be some weirdos out there, like on a Tuesday at 2 p.m. They're like, I need that.
Yeah, and work. I got a 3:25 a hump appointment, and then I dry hump, and then I do.
It's nuts.
And I got to go golf, so I got to. But like. It does sound surreal if you've never heard of it before. But again, there's someone out there who's got that issue.
And you could charge a lot of money because who's to say no? Who's to go, well, I don't – what is there any other dry humping business out there that I can –
Well, you can charge whatever you want. It's not like they can shop around.
No.
It's not like, you know what, I can get 2 for 1 at the other place. Really? All right, I'll pay it. But okay, I think it's a little outrageous.
And there's an art to dry humping. You have to be good at it.
Do you realize that's a statement that's probably never been made, ever?
I know.
There's an art to dry humping. You got to be good at it. That's the art.
Do you?
Yeah. Just be good at it. Because did you know there's an art to cooking?
Yeah.
You got to be good at it.
I mean that people loosely think they could dry hump because they don't think it's dope. So then they're just dry hump, but there is like I feel like a movement and stuff to satisfy her.
Oh, right.
I've made a girl come off dry humping.
Right.
Yeah, and that's not
that's
something
what she told you. Okay.
I saw the
No,
proof.
That's fine. That's
she was wet.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. She
you
didn't
saw visual.
Me.
Okay.
I didn't see underneath the thing, but she told me, and it was in her eyes. But some of these losers out there think they know how to dry hump.
And you're like, look, man.
You don't know how to do it.
You don't bring it like I bring it.
No, they're not because they're sloppy. They're just thinking they're degrading it. They're like thinking that it ain't shit. It's not a real valid sexual experience. I'm here to tell you it is, and I know how to dry hump.
Hard enough tickets are on sale yet for Dave Morehead's dry hump tour, but everyone gets a free dry hump when they show up.
I would say I would be like Tashawn Prince from the Detroit Pistons. Like, that's how good I am at dry humping.
Oh, you'd be like just smooth. Like,
yeah,
just a smooth operator.
I don't know if I'm LeBron yet, but like I've penetrated these people's pants.
Okay, you've done it but through, by not penetrating their pants. That's the irony of it. So you've penetrated their pants by just staying outside their pants.
Outside.
Never heard of it.
There was a comic I used to date, and I was like, I wanted to kick it with her, but it got too hot and heavy, and I think she said, you can't stay at my house tonight, which is fine. But then we were dry humping on her couch, and I bust. I don't even think she knew I busted. She probably didn't know. She was nice about it. And
is that why she said you can't stay at my house?
No, this is before. I had to walk like 7 blocks to get home. And that there's nothing like dry humping. There's nothing sadder than dry humping, but there's nothing sadder than dry humping and leaving at 1 in the morning.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, you
You're
didn't
like,
even...
now what? All right. Okay. Buses, they're not running.
They're
all right.
Not running. I had to walk. It's only you and a stray cat.
He's like, yeah, man. How's your night? You're just talking to this cat? Yeah, don't tell me about it, man. Dry hump.
You can't hang with your friends when you go back.
No, you can't hang
room.
Out somewhere. So you just go right straight to your room. You're like, anyway, I'm sleepy. Good night. Hey, Dave, how was you? Slam. It's like, what's wrong with that guy? I don't know. Weird.
Dry hump, man.
I don't know. Well, Dave, you need a woman, man, based on all this information that we've gathered.
Yeah,
I think it's time
I do,
for.
Man.
I think you are right. It is time for a little lockdown, a little anchor
like,
time.
I poured my heart out.
A little anchor time, you know. It's a funny racket because, like I said, I realized that later in the game that, like, you can do these things and you can find balance in life. But, like, I've always found, like, you've been one of the hardest working comedians I've known in terms of getting up every night and doing spots. And you would go up anywhere. Whoever had a mic or a stage, you're like, yeah, I'm going to get up and do time. Like, but that work ethic, where did you develop that work ethic? Was that something passed down to you by other comics? Did that come from your folks? Like, where was that kind of just perseverance? Where did that come from?
I think when I started, I wasn't really working. I didn't understand how to get good. That's one for sure. I didn't understand how to get good. And it was like doing spots once a month. There was not that many rooms to do in Windsor. And then I found out about Michigan and how we had rooms too, like open mics that I can go to. And then that was a new experience too, crossing the border. And this is like before you had Google on your phone. So I had to print out the, you know, like I had to go to MapQuest,
right, yeah.
Print it out, put the sheet on my parents' car, like in the front seat. And sometimes I was so nervous and scared, I would drive to the show the night before.
Just to make sure you got it right.
Just to make sure I got it right. Yeah. So then it was just super. Then I started going out 3 to 4 times a week. And I just remember I did a guest set at Yuck Yucks, and the manager, it was super cool. You'd give me spots, but I didn't do well. And I think that's the time I think I either was it I doing ecstasy or I started to, I don't know. But I remember he told me in his office, he goes, you're not doing good. He goes, you're not growing. He goes, you don't even stick around to watch the headliners and learn something. He goes, your peers are surpassing you because they're working hard and they're just putting in the time. And I think that echoing in my head, and then someone had told me that Jason Rouse did this amount of shows. And something clicked where I go, I want to beat that number. So yeah. I just, in my head, I was like, whatever that number was, I can't remember at the time, was thrown at me. I stuck with that number, and I did that for like, that's what it was. Something clicked where I go,
that's what it's going to take.
Yeah, and then I was like, I need to find my voice on stage because I didn't want to do setup punch per se, but there's nothing wrong with that. So it was a whole like mix of, it was like a bunch of things mixed together that just, I don't know, it's just a click where I go. And then I never looked back.
You just thought that was going to be your process. I found it's true too. I said this to someone else one time. I was like, the same thing that allures people to stand-up comedy is the same thing that will cut your throat. Like, the fact that you don't have a boss, that there really are no expectations put on you by anyone else. It's all coming from you. So that freedom is like intoxicating. Yeah. Like, who wouldn't want to live like that and have a life where you get to call the shots, you get to do what you want to talk about, what you want to talk about, how you want to talk about it. But that same mentality can also let you be lazy and go, well, I don't have to do anything because I get to call the shots. Yeah. And then you don't evolve, like you said, because now you're taking your foot off the gas. And sometimes you go into it with all this fervor. And then once you have a certain level of success, you can kind of pull back and go, okay, I know how to do that now. But it's like the growing is supposed to continue for all of us. Like, you know?
Yeah, it's like, and it, like, then as you get like more into it, I feel you have to work smarter. So now I just try to work as like, because I went on stage a lot too back then because I needed to find my voice. I was so fixated on finding my voice. So I would do rooms extra when I probably didn't have to.
Yeah.
But I wasn't doing those rooms to probably work a joke out. I was just doing those rooms so I can get 100% comfortable on stage where it felt like it was my home. Yeah. Then so I could be myself.
Yeah.
So I was kind of using the stage time. So I think a lot of people that I came up with or in the community that I was a part of back then was like, this guy's like so crazy hardworking, which was true. I'm not saying I'm not a hard worker, but also they didn't know that there was another process going on.
Right.
They didn't get that I wasn't writing at a coffee shop. I wasn't writing anywhere. I was writing on stage.
Right.
So they didn't get that. So they took whatever information they wanted to, which is, you know, you can't blame them. And they go, I'm going to narrate this story of what I think is about him.
Right.
When they never... Which that's why sometimes I just laugh when someone's like, he'll do a mic anywhere. And I'm like, true, because I just really needed to. I thought if I found who I was, that would be the dopest thing.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? If I purely just did comedy based off what my voice was, I thought that would take me to like a level I needed to be and stuff. Because I was always like, I liked the idea how Roseanne and Tim Allen from their act developed a TV show.
Yeah.
So that always has been in my head since I started. Because I was like, I want to do that. So how do I get myself up there? I'm not really the best joke writer. I'm not the best, but I'm saying I don't really find that as exciting for me.
Right.
I just like the idea of, yeah. So I had to find out what works for me, and that's what was it. So I had to just go to these shitty ass rooms and do 15 shows a week, not because I was like trying to prove to someone I'm like, oh, look how hard I'm working. It's just like, man, I gotta find my voice. How do I get so comfortable up there where I'll let out all my insecurities, all my vulnerabilities? I have to not think about it.
Yeah.
Because there's like, when you're up there, you're like, if I make this my home, then everything will just come out. I won't be afraid to be like, man, I come fast.
Yeah, yeah. Totally vulnerable, totally exposed. Yeah.
So it's like, there was that was I would say, that was the whole process of it all.
Yeah.
Why I worked at it like that.
Because when I talk to people who want to get into stand-up, like after shows, you have someone come up and go like, hey, I've always wanted to be a comedian. And I always have time for someone like that if they're respectful. If they're not coming up with a swagger and ego, they're actually, you could tell they're sincere about like, yeah, I've always wanted to try it. But part of me wants to tell them like, it's going to take so much time. Like, I don't think people realize to get competent at anything brand new, whether it's playing guitar or being a comedian or whatever it is, it takes so much repetition. And only if you love it are you going to put in those hours required. If you don't, you'd be the person who just gets up once in a while. And like every time you do that, it'll be like starting over because you haven't put in the time. There's been a good gap. And now it's like, oh, I got a set tonight. Last time you were on stage was 4 weeks ago. It's like starting over. It's like just like, okay, how do these things go again? Like, I don't think people understand how much time. And that's just the artistic side. That's not even to do with like the booking and business side and like all that other stuff. That's another thing that's going to come in and bash you and beat you up too. But just the creative side of trying to do those things you said, find your voice, develop material. How do you push yourself? How do you grow as an artist? Like those things take. And there's so many ups and downs within that. You know, of just like, you have times where everything you say is amazing and crowds love it. And you go through other dips where it's like, man, I'm just like, I just can't, nothing works for you. Like, you know, and so I almost want to say that to them without scaring them off, like, just be prepared to put in the time.
And it's like, my brother asked me once, my little brother, he's a super funny dude. He asked me like, not once, because I think it was like this year. He was just like, yo, big bro, I want to try to do stand up. You know, I think he's like, I got some funny stuff. He goes, what do you think? I said, hey, man, I'm not one that's, I never stop you. But let me tell you this. I go, I only do this because I love it. I know that's like everyone loves it. But I legitimately, I would never do this if I didn't love it. I'd never wish this upon anyone. I was like, if I didn't love this, I would have stopped like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You have to like, ideally, like, I mean, not just love it. Like, you have to love every inch of it and every aspect of it, the whole process. Because if not, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's
You'll
not.
Quit.
That blows my mind when people are just doing it. I'm like, why?
I know.
Like, it's weird. It's not weird, but it's like, but it's like, that's what I. And my brother, after that, I don't think brought it up to me ever again.
He was like, oh, okay, never mind.
I think it was it. Was
well, like, there's a great quote, right, about, I think it's Steve Jobs says, he goes, if you're going to do something, you may as well love it, because when the shit times come, and they will come, he goes, you'll persevere and go through those times to get it. But he goes, when you're doing something you don't necessarily enjoy and the shit times come, he goes, you're going to quit because you're sane, because that's a normal thing to want to do. Like, I already don't like this. Now it's even worse. Yeah, I'm walking. Like, I'm out of here.
That's the thing. It's sane.
Yeah. It's like, you want happiness. You want to be like, have happiness in your life. And if you're not happy doing what you're doing to start, and then here comes even more misery on top of that, like, who sticks around? Nobody.
Oh,
you're not going to want to do it. So I think you're right. But people, I think you're hardcore, like I am in the way too, where I never started this thinking about like money or TV or any of those other things. I just knew like that sensation of making people laugh. I finally found like I found the thing I was supposed to do. It was more of a feeling, like an overall. I remember, like, I used to do gigs. You do these horrible gigs where you get paid $50 to open and drive 9 hours. And I would, like, come back, and Wednesday I'd get a call from the office. They're like, yeah, you got to come by and pick up your check. And I go, oh, shit, we could get paid.
Yeah.
I used to forget we used to get paid because I loved it so much. I'm like, oh, man, we did these shows. It was awesome. I was hanging with these guys. We were laughing. Like, I forgot. So to me, it's always been the opposite of what most people do a job for. Most folks want a job because it pays a certain amount. And the second thing they always ask is, what's the vacation status? How much vacation? We don't want to know how much we can't do it. We want to know how often we can do it.
Yeah.
You know? And I was like, that's how you know, I think.
Well, and look at even this day. Like, even the shittier times in comedy, I'd rather stay doing these shitty times than getting a job. But, like, look, even today, man, we ate and we're doing a podcast.
Fun, man. Being idiots.
It's
ridiculous.
Like, you know, I think we also are spoiled that you have too many of these days. And then you forget that, like, you're not doing anything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're doing dope.
But I remember that heartbreak. I remember working with a comic. Like, I had a day job. And I remember, like, the weekend would end. And it was just like, it was at the end of a vacation, you know? Like, you'd be, like, Friday, drive into the thing, do the gig, drinks after. Saturday, drive to the gig, drinks after. Sunday would be like a Saturday where you're like, okay, I go back to my real life on Monday. And I remember thinking, like, I have to get up tomorrow morning and go to a job, whereas this guy gets to, like, sleep in, might go to the gym, might go to the mall because he's got another gig that night. And I'm like, that's the life I want. It wasn't about – I didn't think about money at all. I didn't even process that. I actually thought people who were on TV were rich. I just automatically thought
that.
But not until you get in the business do you realize. But money never, ever entered my mind. It was just like – I was like, I want that life. Like, I want to be able to pick and choose, and I want to be able to. So that was the allure of it for me. Plus, I mean, the biggest thing, of course, was the stage and performing and feeling that energy.
Dude, even like flying here, I flew here, obviously, but like I sitting at the window seat, and then a family comes and sits down. They have like a young kid. The kid's maybe like, she's like two. It just seems like she was two. And then I'm sitting and just minding my business, and I feel something hit my chest. And I look over, and the kid threw its half-eaten grilled cheese sandwich on my chest.
This would only happen to you. You know that.
Yeah,
right?
And then the dad goes, hey, man, I'm sorry. And I just couldn't say anything. Because the truth was, I go, why am I doing this? Like, I equated it to comedy and, like, my life. I go, I could quit. But it has nothing to do with the dream. I go, I got to love doing stand-up for watching a kid pelt me.
With a grilled half-eaten sandwich.
And stare at me. Like, I got to love this.
You just pick it up off the ground, take a bite. It's all right, man. You just throw it back and whip the kid in the face with it. We're even.
I should have done
even.
It, but I just
sat there. Dude, your life could be, you said earlier you would like your stage you to have a show. Like, that would be in the show. Like, it would be like you just going, oh, man, I don't know what's going on in my life. You're just sitting in an airport hanging out, and a grilled cheese sandwich just smokes you in the face.
It's like, what did I do?
I got
to
make a different life choice. This is that cheese? Oh, God. Like, just
everything happened, and then part of me is like, oh, man, like, do I – it's just like these – I don't know.
Because you and I both know, man, like, you and I both know people – who are in this business. It wasn't about talent. They had the talent. They had boatloads of it. Funny, charisma, nice people. But they literally just hit the wall one day and got tired of the shit. And they were like, they just walked away. They were like, I just can't live like this anymore. And but further to your point, what you said to your brother, it's like that happens to so many people. People go like, oh, he used to be a comedian. And I used to think like, oh, they couldn't have been very funny because they don't do it anymore. And now because I've been in it long enough, I go, they might have been hilarious. But they were just like, it never came for them in the time frame they wanted success in their mind. And so they're like, I can't live like this. I need stability. I need to anchor. I'm getting older. You start just all this negative self-talk, and then you pull out of the game. And like, so now I have that realization with people. It's like, it is hard. It's terribly hard.
And that, you said something dope. It's like their timeline.
Yes.
That's the worst part you could do is set up. And I do. And I have an issue with that in my own head. I set up these fake timelines, and you can't.
No.
Because it's going to fuck you up.
It's the worst thing ever, man.
To be like, oh, in 4 years. It's like, yeah, you never know.
And that's when we talked about this over lunch. It's like that saying that I heard last year, like another level, another devil. Everyone thinks that when you get to a certain level, all the problems stop, that now there's no more challenges. Every door opens for you. Yeah. And then as you start to move up the levels, you realize, no, there is just another struggle.
Yeah.
And then you have another struggle. Like, it doesn't end. I don't care who you are. Like people often say, like, oh, Louis C.K. or Bill Burr, these guys got it so good. They're well known. They're famous. I'm like, yeah, but now you have to deal with the pressure of following all the other amazing work you've done.
Yeah.
And now you're that guy. So people expect your shit to be the best ever.
All the time.
And all the time.
You have to go to another level.
Yeah.
You just can't stay there.
Where do you go? Like, where do you go when you're at the top of the mountain? Where do you go?
You have to get another level.
Do you know what I mean?
So they're dealing with that shit. So it's like, I think not setting any timelines is important. That's why when you said it, I go, yeah, man, that's I'm gonna take that note and not do that to
myself.
And it's
hard because we all want to know how much time and effort it's going to take to reach our goals. Everyone wants that. Like, you go to university, 4 years, do this much work, you get this degree, you know, like that's an equation. It's easy to figure out and you end up here. Yeah. Entertainment is not like that. Entertainment's like, you just put your head down, enjoy the process. And stuff's going to come at you from areas you didn't even know. Like, we don't get to make all the shots. We just put the work in and go hard, and then stuff is either going to happen or it's not going to happen.
And you never know.
You know?
So it's like, you got to – and that's what I think, you know, it's just like I try to tell just like friends of mine, you know, not that I'm running around giving advice. I'm like, man, you just got to be happy where you're at.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like, you know, trying to worry about sadness from the past or – finding happiness in the future that you're not there is too much effort and extra energy that you don't need. If you just like look at, I know it's kind of hacky, but it's just like, you just got to come to be happy about it and have an outside. We talked about it earlier. Now I try to do things. Like, I'll try to hang out on a Friday night.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? I told myself, like, man, I'm not gonna let this game ever get me bitter. I'll leave before, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's like, try to build that attitude of like, yeah, man, I'm going to try to have fun day to day. You know, it is what it is. I'm going to strive for huge things, but I can only control what I can control. So I'm not going to sit on Sunday and complain about something that's never happened or isn't happening. I'm just going to kick it with Sunday, and then that's it.
Yeah,
that's
all you can do. And you realize, too, that someone would trade with you in a moment. Like, there's a comic, for example, who can't even get guest spots at this club.
Yeah.
And you're headlining this club. Like, they would switch with you tonight. Like, right now, they'd go, I'll take that. But we can kind of lose sight of that because you're in it. And I started this thing this year, man, this gratitude practice where, like, most mornings I wake up and I'll do some, like, meditation for, like, 5 minutes, like, 10 minutes. It's just, like, deep breathing, basically. Like, you just clear your head of any kind of thought. If any thought comes in, you just try and get rid of it. Just focus on your breathing. So it just kind of gives your mind a rest. But the other thing I started to do after that was like this gratitude practice where I just write down 3 things I'm grateful for. Could be something small, man, like slept in a warm bed last night. You know, it's minus 35 out.
Yeah.
I slept in a warm bed, or had a great conversation with an old friend I haven't seen in a long time.
Yeah.
But like just scanning your life for these little tiny things that some people don't have in their life. But I think if you're always waiting for that big monumental thing, like it's never enough, dude.
No.
Like, you'll never have enough money. Your car will never be nice enough. Your girlfriend will never be hot enough. It's like, because you're always looking over the fence to other people. And that's rampant in comedy. Like, always looking over the fence. Like, what's that guy got? How did she get? You know what I mean? It's like, you're never going to be happy. Forget it. It'll never be enough for you. You know? So just doing that every day, it kind of rewires my mind to go like, man, just be happy. Like, look at you. You can get out of bed, for example. Like, you can stand up out of bed and walk. There's people who are in a hospital who, you know, they're never going to walk ever again. Like, just that quick, simple things of rewiring.
There's a thing, too, today. It's fucked up because this dude, I think he just messaged me years ago about stand up. I don't know. I can't remember where I met him, and that's my bad. But then today he messaged me. He goes, "Hey man, I think I'm gonna get into comedy." He goes, "But things are different." He goes, "I'm in a wheelchair now." He goes, "I just don't know what places have ramps."
Yeah, he's got to consider that.
Yeah, yeah. So that's, and that I was just like, "Damn."
Imagine.
Yeah, it's like, damn. Like I was just like. Not to make it somber or anything, but I just was like, I don't even know how to answer this. I was like, hey, I don't know. I you know, but it's like, wow. I just was like, man, like, yeah. I'm not his homie. Like, I don't know him well. Yeah. I just know him through that, like, you know, he just messaged me and stuff like that. Yeah. And I didn't get back to him because he had told me a joke.
Right.
He goes, hey, man, you could try this, but it's kind of edgy. But it was wrong.
Yeah.
Like, I can't do it. Like, because I felt bad. I didn't want to write him back going, yeah. This is not funny, or I can't do it. Just was a joke. I don't even
yeah,
tell it.
Like, gonna...
But then the next message, and this is like, I think it might have been a year or 2 years after, I don't know, was that.
Right.
So I was like, oh, man. It's like,
yeah.
And only because you said I can get up and walk.
Yeah.
I was like,
no, I know. That's what I mean. Like, just people out there with struggles that you just forget people have in this life because we live a certain life. Everyone lives a certain way. You look
with
at
arrogance,
problems.
I feel.
Yeah. It's a sense of entitlement, it's a sense of, well, you know, I have that, and, you know, but, like, just breathing. Like, there's people who can't, they struggle to get a breath, yeah. or they have to have, they're hooked up to oxygen. Like, it's just, like, it's just small rewiring of your brain and your life, and it's, like, I don't know. Sometimes those small little adjustments can make a big difference. But, like, so you're in Toronto. You moved from Toronto to Los Angeles. How many years were you in Los Angeles?
I lived in Los Angeles for 2 years. And
what was that experience like? What's your take on your time in LA?
You know, at first it was like hurtful because in a sense that you know what it is. It's like you have an ego. I have an ego.
Everyone does.
You know, everyone has an ego. So my ego did well in Toronto, and my ego got to LA, and it just lied to itself. It thought it could handle. Like I was in my head. I'm like, oh, this is fine. But no, it's like, you know, you got to start from the bottom.
Yeah.
So I sat with that for maybe like a year. So I was like, this is, you know, like, just like I went up and down from being happy to sad to depressed. So I dealt with all those emotions. And then just 1 year while I was there, I was like, man, I don't give a shit. Like, you know what I'm saying? I accept it. I go, yeah, I'm at the bottom. And then then things got way better
because
of a switch of a mentality. And then I was having fun, man. At like, you know, I was like, I did some cool shows out there. You know what I mean? I did some, like, you know, some cool things, and I had fun.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? But I just didn't click with the city as much as I thought I would, because I thought I was supposed to be there.
Right.
And then when I got there, I go, oh, I don't, you know, outside of stand up, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, yep. I'm not going to tell you, I didn't have the craziest great time. Like, you know what I mean? Like, yep. I wasn't like on every goddamn show, but I got on some shows, that, you know, I was cool with.
Yeah.
I was getting on maybe like two, if I worked hard, maybe like 2 to 4 times a week.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, cool.
Good.
So I wasn't
good.
Like,
yeah.
And there'll be, you know, I was cool with that. Like, did I smash it? Smash it? No, I did good. You know, I didn't walk away from LA like, I hate this place, or I'm like, I hate the comedy scene. Like,
right.
You know what I mean? I didn't walk away going, you did me wrong. I walked away. I'm like, oh, they treated me cool. I just, you know, like, really just wanted to see if I just had a window where my person I was subletting from, my friend, actually was like, why don't you move?
Oh, yeah, okay. You're like, okay, that was the straw. That's
He kind of convinced me to go. He goes, dude, try it. You're subletting. You don't have a car. You don't have a girlfriend.
Yeah, you're not attached to anything.
Yeah, he goes, have you ever lived in New York? I go, no. And then I go, yeah. And then I just tried it.
Packed up and moved to New York.
May 1st.
It's interesting because L.A., Dave Nystrom, who lived down there for a long time, Dave told me once, Dave was a guest on the podcast, and he's like, he goes, people forget when they go to L.A. like that Los Angeles is also just a city, like, that you can enjoy, and it has all these other amazing things to offer, whether it's going to live music or going to the beach or doing other things, farmers markets. He goes, but, like, people go down there in the entertainment world, and they're just so driven and focused to, like, I got to get that next audition. I got to get that call back. I got to get the spot at this club. It's like they put all their eggs in that basket, and he goes, they're miserable. He goes, and he had to learn how to go, man, I'm going to, like, I put the work in. I did that. Now I want to go enjoy Los Angeles. Like, I want to go enjoy the area, drive up the Pacific Coast Highway. Like, but he had to pull back from it to start getting some happiness in it. Like, he had to pull back from that world.
Then I started to think, I go, buddy, I can't swim. So the beach is nothing for
me. All right, that's out.
I don't like scenery that much.
You know
much.
Who's a great swimmer?
Ooh.
Shane. That guy.
I mean, for a puppet, this guy, he is buoyant. I mean, this guy.
he can swim. I just didn't really like driving. And it
is a nightmare to drive in.
Yeah,
like
I just didn't. I didn't buy a car. A lot so of then traffic. In my head, I was like, why am I here?
Yeah.
What is it? I'm failing at it. I'm not failing. Like, I mean, like, why am I here if I'm, like, I'm not enjoying what, like, when people are like, let's go to the beach. And I go, I'm not taking my shoes off. That was my biggest thing.
Yeah, you're like, there could be a needle. There could be, yeah. I don't know.
So I just wasn't, I was failing at the things people thought was dope there.
Right.
And I go, that's why when I got to New York, I go, buildings, people screaming at each other.
Yeah.
All that shit.
Comfort.
Dude, for me, I saw a guy outside of a bodega. I go, yeah. Like, I was like, what if my priorities are all fucked up?
So you literally, like, this is like just a few weeks ago. You moved to New York City.
I like it.
And you get, and you'd been there a few times before right?
Before I was, so you like, since 2009.
Yeah.
So I've become.
Now, the scene there, because, you know, I started doing some work in the U.S. a couple of years ago, and I would attest to what you said about it is, like, it's very humbling because it is like starting over.
Yeah.
Even to get into clubs, like even to get on stage is like you have to go through a lot of hoops just to make that happen. So it's almost like forget everything you've ever done in Canada. You are a brand new comic who's just trying to make your way here. And that's hard. Like it's really hard to bury everything that you've done. You're like, you're asking me to leave all this back here and go down there and start from scratch and just trying to build a reputation. In terms of, like, getting on stages, do you find it different, L.A. and New York? Do you find the stages different in terms of how they're set up? Or is it it's very similar or what?
Well, no, I just haven't really had enough time with New York, but it just seems like there's more comedy clubs there.
Yeah.
There's way more comedy clubs. So that right there is a difference.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think it's more of a stand-up city, right?
Yeah.
L.A., you can, you know. It's just different, like, in a sense, like, what I wanted for myself. I go, you know what, man? People know me from stand-up in Canada. Nobody was like, oh, that guy's an actor or that guy's a writer. They're like, he's a stand-up. So why was I going to a place that, like, you know, maybe stand-up isn't the top thing there? Like, why didn't I go to New York, which stand-up is that's what you do. So that's where I could show people how like, my talent. So I just made, a decision in my mind, a strategic decision. I go, dude, just go somewhere where you can show that.
Yeah.
The fuck are you doing if you're not trying to partake in any of this shit?
Yeah.
So then that's what – so – New York is just has a much like you know you can get on more from like from what I see my friends like my friends are getting on a bunch compared to my friends in LA they're like you know you can get on a lot in LA but it's just like you got to work really like you know it's just but there's also just so many clubs in New York and so many spots so
that's awesome man I think it'll work out for you. I think there's a bravery too especially with the LA carrot because so many Canadians. Like, I'm going to L.A. And it's almost like the fact that they've told everyone they're going to L.A. and then they go, there's almost now this pressure to make it. Like, all right. And I know optically people can think, well, you're in L.A., you made it. But in reality, you know when you move there, the struggle has just started.
Yeah.
Like, you're literally now just putting on the helmet like, all right, here we go. This is going down. Like, but people could think, oh, he's living in L.A., now he's married. It's like, but that's not the reality of the situation. No. And then what I'm saying is they might feel pressure then to now stay there just because any leaving of that city would be defeat. Like if they leave or go home or if they leave and go to another city, it's like, they couldn't make it in wherever. Whereas I would take my hat off to you in a sense that you're like, hey, this pond doesn't work for me and what I'm trying to accomplish. So I'm willing to pack it up and go somewhere else. Whereas I think some people would be, I'm just going to stay here and drown.
Yeah.
You
I
know,
didn't
and not be happy.
Yeah.
And not be
I just wasn't 100% happy. Like I usually am.
Yeah.
That was a problem. I'm usually more happier and you're right. I get it, man. And if you want to think I failed, that's fine. I'm fine with that. If you want to think I went there and I couldn't make it, that's fine too. Because
weren't worried about people's perception of what it was.
I don't care anymore.
And you
should. Like,
you should.
You know, before I used to. I'm not gonna lie. It would break my heart. I'd be like, "What a loser!" Everyone's gonna say that I failed. But good man, think I failed.
Yeah.
I'm a lot happier in New York. I feel great, just in life. Not even doing stand up.
Yeah.
You know, I'm around dope ass friends that I always want to be around.
Yeah.
And even when I was in L.A., I just didn't click with certain things out there in a sense. Like, I'm like, I'm not, like, you know, just I didn't want certain things. I wanted to do stand-up.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? I thought, you know, so I was like, I want to go somewhere and perform.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I want to make it, yeah. I want to be a star, but, like, man, I'm not even doing stand-up anymore.
Yeah.
Like, I got to go do something that was like, why did I, who am I? I'm just playing myself.
Right.
Like, to think that. I worked to be a stand-up for 14 years in Toronto. Why did I just get to L.A.? Like, well, now I want to be this. So that's what it was for me. And And city and New York is just a city. Like, I just got there and I went, oh, this is the right decision.
It felt right away.
Like, when I was in L.A., yeah, I felt, don't even have to say that. I just felt, when I got to New York, this is what it is.
Yeah, I think in general, too, like, cities, and we both travel quite a bit doing stand-up, and I feel like, this is going to sound a little hokey, but, like, I feel like every city has, like, an energy to it, like a heartbeat to it. Yeah. And I've been to places where I go, I could live here. And I've been to other places where I go, I could never live here. Doesn't mean it's a bad place. Doesn't mean it's a great place. It just means for me and my personality and how I'm wired, this would work out for me. And I don't even know anything about their comedy scene. Like, I just know there's a club and I know whatever, but I just go, the optics of the place and just, there's, I don't know how to describe it except for that there's a tangible thing you can feel.
There's a simple thing in New York where I was like, ah, this is the place. A friend, a dude I know, came out and he goes, ah, fuck this guy. Like, said that. Like, he came out of a bar or something. He goes, ah, fuck this guy or fuck this. And I go, this is my town. Well, because I don't think they might have said it in L.A., but there's no bopping energy. There's not somebody coming out mad. And I don't know why in my head I went, that was so alluring.
That was attractive to you. You're like, that should be in the tourism commercial. Ah, fuck this guy. New York.
I want to be a part of the fuck this guy.
I want to be the reason that guy says fuck that guy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And in L.A., I never got that. Everyone was like, it was just so mellow.
Me playing a shrink here, maybe it was you talking about, you know, how much you want to get on stage at an early part of your career to find your voice. And the goal was to be comfortable on stage and be vulnerable. And maybe in New York, you feel that people are a little bit more vulnerable just in their day to day life. Like, there's less of that armor up and guard up. It's kind of like, because not everyone's an actor. Not everyone's trying to get something. People are just like going to 9-to-5 jobs or going to real. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's less of that. There could be, you know, just people more real.
You're exactly right. And I just didn't deal with it right in L.A.
Yeah.
That's what it was. You know, you can call me a bitch or weak. I just was like getting too frustrated with that. I go, why aren't you like...
I want to shake people.
Yeah. And then I just didn't do comedy. I go, well, what am I like? You know what I mean? Like, I remember losing it at a table with like one of my last nights there, just kind of like snapping on things. And I was with like two comic friends of mine and one of their girlfriends. And he was like, the girlfriend, she's like laughing. And then the comic friend of mine was like, yeah, there it is, man.
And there's that anger.
Yeah, and it was gone for 2 years. It was gone. It was not around. Like, I was like, and it was one of those things where I'm like just losing it. I go, and fuck this, and that guy, and everybody.
You belong in New York. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I gotta go.
But he was like, there it is. Like, you.
You muted it for 2 years.
Yeah. So I don't know if, like, I don't know. And, you know, and then I got there, and it just, like, I felt great, man. Even performing, and then you just go to another place, you go walk, and like subway to subway. I just had like a, you know, and it's the honeymoon phase. That's what the New Yorker people who live there tell me, like my friends. But I go, they never lived in L.A. in a sense. I saw both sides.
Yeah, they don't have the contrast of
contrast.
Yeah.
And I know what's better for me now. And this is better for me.
Yeah.
So I can always be enjoying New York. I feel because I know this is where I want to be, and I like.
Yeah, yeah. So. No, that's true. Well, at least you can be honest with yourself and know that that was the best move for you and make that jump. Because sometimes people, especially when you're following your passion or career or whatever, it's like you almost feel like there's so many risks you make. And then once you get to a certain point, it's like, hey, you're done taking risks. But like to move somewhere where you go, no, this isn't working out, but I'm willing to move somewhere else. It's like, again, another level, another devil. You just keep taking
going,
risks, keep rolling the dice. And so sometimes that's geographic location. Sometimes it's changing the style of your act or the topics. Like, there's always another thing to change and a card to flip over. You know?
And I really agree with you where, like, some people just stay in L.A. because they have that fear. But who gives a fuck?
Yeah. Be happy, man.
Dude, it's not – because ideally, man, you could leave L.A. and go to Chicago and then pop up. Like, who the fuck knows? Like,
I totally agree.
So you sat in L.A. because you're like, you didn't want four middles in Toronto who do middle work, who make $200 a year – to go, he's a failure.
Right. You're worried about that.
Who haven't even left that city. Who don't even have a green card. Who probably won't attempt to get a green card, dictate how you live. And I was like, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
That's not my thing anymore, man. That could be your thing, but I don't care.
Yeah.
I could have fucking moved to the Middle East, man. Yeah. I don't give a fuck.
You're just going to be happy.
Yeah.
I hear you, man. I hear you. Well, dude, this was a really good conversation.
I think so, too.
I think I learned a lot about you, man. I mean, I learned about puppets.
Yeah. Randy the puppet.
Dry humping expert.
Dry humping,
You open that place up.
Art.
I mean, it's going to be... Dave's open a place called Crotch to Crotch, and it's going to be... it's called Hop Crotch, and it's going to be opened up real soon.
Dude, I do feel good, though. I'm not going to lie. It's not...
No, you look... I'll be honest with you, man. You seem happier. Like, than the last time I saw you, like, I don't even remember what it would have been. It would have been a couple of years ago, maybe. Yeah. But you seem more content. You seem a little bit more centered, and you just seem happier. Like, that's...
Thank
and that's
you,
the
man.
Goal. Like, regardless of... I don't know what you're doing in your life. It's like, are you happy? Like, can you be honest and go, are you happy right now? And people lie all the time about that. They're like, no, man, things are good. Yeah. Things are good. It's like, no, they're not. You don't. No. You know what I mean? But
you still go. I'll still go through some shit. You know what I mean? That's normal. But I'm trying. I'm just going to do shit that I want to do. That's what it is, too. I'm like, I'm going to do shit that I want to do. And whatever, man. Let's have, like, if I want to take a trip somewhere now, I'm like, yeah, I'll go take a trip there. I don't have to fucking go. Before, I was so restricted to be like comedy.
Right. Yeah.
Now
you feel chained to the place.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not about that.
No, it's like, just go enjoy your life and the balance. It'll happen when it happens. No. So, all right, brother, we'll have a good show tonight.
Thank you.
Hopefully we'll have you again on the podcast.
Yeah. I'll be back here in Calgary for the festival.
Okay, you're back
September,
in October? Awesome.
October, sorry.
Yeah. YYC Comedy Festival in Calgary. Great festival. They got a good lineup this year, too. It's going to be great.
Fun,
best of luck, and we'll talk soon.
Yeah.
All right, brother. Later. Bye.
That's how it all started. Like a whisper in your ear. You told them you loved them. And ran as fast as you could. It's not to be taken lightly, but then you never were. Your fingers bleeding, your body aches from the thunder in your heart. So you laid on the line, blindfolded and chalk marked, like a good little soldier. Knew just what you were. Can you give up now? Can you turn this around? Can you keep your heart beating? How do you live when you don't know how? So you laid on the line, blindfolded and chalk marked, like a good little soldier, knew just what you were. Fast enough to make it over.